Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken in my regular Friday reader seat down here in warmer than you have up there, Missouri. And we are reading from the Friday, March 22nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we have our first piece now from the first page on the top of the fold. And with it comes a rather large picture, including the governor and many other women and men in the background, smiling and looking in through a doorway, it looks like. And the caption beneath it reads, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and others take a tour of the Dubuque Y Early Learning Center, smiling at toddlers who were waving from a room at the center on Chauvinel Road on Thursday. And with it also is another smaller picture, and that caption, and it has Governor Reynolds, and it looks like Superintendent Hawkins and others in the picture. And that caption reads, Dubuque Community School staff members, Brenda Duvall, Lisa T. Bockhorst, and Superintendent Amy Hawkins, give the governor a tour of the planned Seedlings Preschool Center on Chauvinel Road. And our article is, Reynolds gets first-hand look at childcare growth. Dubuque economic, education, government, and nonprofit leaders on Thursday celebrated new funding from a local collaborative expected to boost the area's childcare capacity by more than 500 spots. Representatives of Dubuque Initiatives and Greater Dubuque Development Corporation hosted a grand opening and tours of the Bright Minds campus at 7900 Chauvinel Road, which included a visit from Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds earlier in the day and testimonials from individuals impacted by the new child care developments. After sharing details with the Telegraph Herald earlier in the week, Dubuque Initiatives and GDDC announced at the event Thursday that they have allocated a total of $621,816.86 to 16 Dubuque County Child Care Centers for recruitment of 141 additional staff members. The extra staffing will result in an additional capacity of 516 child care slots countywide. The allocation is the first of three anticipated rounds of disbursements from a fund launched with a $560,000 state grant last year. Area employers since have donated $780,000 in fulfillment of a local match requirement, with the largest contributor being John Deere Foundation, which recently pledged $600,000 to the initiative over the next 3 years. We will invest both in the development of this beautiful facility where we find ourselves this afternoon, and also in a support program to assist existing childcare businesses, including wage enhancement, so that our childcare workers can have a living wage, said Dawn Lucan, Crawler's program manager with John Deere, speaking to a crowd of close to 100 people at the Bright Minds campus on Thursday. The building, purchased by Dubuque Initiatives from Medline in 2022, houses Dubuque Y Early Learning Center and soon will house Dubuque Community Schools Seedlings Preschool Center. Iowa Kim Reynolds, Governor Kim Reynolds, toured the facility Thursday morning ahead of the grand opening and met with local stakeholders for the programs housed there. Dubuque Community School Superintendent Amy Hawkins told Reynolds about the district and Dubuque Community Y's plan to collaborate on a wraparound care program for families who need after-school child care for their preschool-aged children. She also noted that the two entities hope to share building space, professional learning opportunities, and staff. Reynolds described the facility as a model for other communities and said the state wants to continue partnering with local entities for similar projects. Childcare is a number one priority of ours, so we're going to continue to look at ways we can help be that partner and help with funding, she said. In an interview with the TH, Reynolds touted her administration's investment of over $500 million in childcare from business grants and construction of new facilities to support of existing centers. She also praised the partnerships between the county, city, and business community to leverage state funding and create Bright Minds Campus. Dubuque Initiatives also was awarded a $2.16 million grant, state grant, for the project to purchase and transform the former Medline building into a child care center. It's incredible to have businesses step up and be a part of it and recognize that they win because workforce is all I'm hearing about from businesses, she said. We're trying to bring new people to this state. We're trying to keep our young people that are graduating, and we want to make sure that we can allow them to work by providing affordable, quality childcare. This facility is doing that. On Thursday afternoon, GDDC President and CEO Rick Dickinson said that by providing additional funding for existing child care centers, GDDC and Dubuque Initiatives hopes those employers can boost wages and training for staff. This ideally will improve retention and recruitment and increase overall child care capacity. Holy Family Catholic Schools Early Childhood Program Director Liz Ernst said that already has been the case for her organization, which recently received a total of about $170,000 across five facilities from the Dubuque County Child Care Solutions Fund. The fund is being administered in partnership with Exceptional Persons, Inc. and Child Care Resources and Referral of Northeast Iowa. This grant, along with others that we have received from the state, have enabled us to fulfill a long-standing goal of compensating our dedicated team with fairer wages, Ernst said. Just last month, Holy Family Early Childhood awarded stay bonuses to one-third of our workforce who have worked for us for over 5 years. And we are investing in training for our employees and incentivizing continual professional development. Piasta resident Zach Little said he and his wife, Sarah, found themselves in sudden need of new childcare for their 2-year-old son in December. Coincidentally, Dubuque Y Early Learning Center had its open house only days later. Zach said their son is now enrolled at the center, and their daughter, born earlier this month, will be as well. The passion that all the providers have here gives us a lot of peace when we're both working, he said. Our second piece from the front page. Iowa House OK's new AEA changes, lower increase to per pupil funding. Republicans in the Iowa House of Representatives on Thursday passed another version of a bill that would reform area education agencies and set education funding. The amended bill would replace the version passed by Republican senators earlier this week. It would bundle AEA changes with an increased minimum teacher pay and a per pupil state funding increase, but with some differences from the Senate bill, such as a 2.5% supplemental state aid increase, higher teacher pay minimums, and a task force to study AEA effectiveness. The bill requires school districts to send 100% of special education funding that currently goes to AEAs to the agencies in the first year, then 90% thereafter. For education and media services, 60% of funding that currently goes to the AEAs would go to districts in the first year, and 40% would go to AEAs. In the second year and after, 100% of funding for education and media services would remain with districts, though they could continue to contract with AEAs for those services. Iowa Representative Steve Bradley, Republican Cascade, said in an interview that the proposed changes were positive. "We have a task force. That's important for us in the House when it's not important over there in the Senate," he said. "Districts are mandated to send 90% to AEAs, beginning in year two. Some of the superintendents said they wanted to keep some of this money so they can manage. Some of this is what the governor wants. We're trying to do a little compromise, trying to do what's best for the kids." Republicans in the House had been split on the proposal Governor Kim Reynolds unveiled in her condition of the state address to start the session, some preferring a scaled-back plan that was separate from per-pupil state school aid and teacher pay increases. The House already passed each of those separate proposals once. Senate Republicans held firm, though, passing a package earlier this week with more significant changes to AEA staffing and funding and lower teacher pay minimums. Democrats in both chambers have spent the session insisting most school districts, teachers, and parents do not want Republicans' AEA changes. "The changes in these bills jeopardize the services offered by AEAs," Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Dubuque Democrat, said on the floor. "Instead of listening to parents, educators, and Iowans, the governor hired an out-of-state private company to write a bill that includes cuts to mental health, disability, and behavioral and reading recovery services to our kids in our public, private, and home schools, all services provided by the AEAs. The new House proposal also would increase the minimum starting teacher pay from $33,500 to $47,500 in 1 year, then to $50,000 starting the next year. It would raise minimum pay for teachers with 12 years or more of experience to $60,000 in year one, then $62,000. The bill also includes $22 million to fund the teacher raises and $14 million for required educational support personnel raises. The bill would, beginning in the fiscal year 2026, limit the maximum AEA director's salary to 125% of the average of all superintendents of districts served by the AEA. Iowa Representative Shannon Lundgren, Republican Piasta, had questioned AEA overhaul proposals after speaking with constituents and area superintendents, but she supported the House's new package. "We were not going to be able to do nothing," she told the Telegraph Herald, "and we were able to keep the task force, which was really important. I have benefited a lot from having Keystone AEA Administrator Stan Reingans, who was a Dubuque Community Schools superintendent there, for advice in all of this." Reingans watched Thursday night's debate from a House gallery and said in an interview he still had concerns over the bill. "The biggest concern we have is the impact it could have on education and media because those dollars get dumped right into districts' general fund," he said. "So there's no requirement for districts to spend those dollars on education and media. So that will impact AEAs in year two and beyond." The bill also lowered the proposed increase to per-pupil state funding for public schools from the 3% the House originally proposed to 2.5% proposed by Reynolds. The Senate has yet to propose a number. On the floor, Iowa Representative Chuck Eisenhardt, Democrat Dubuque, likened that increase to food insecurity, but for funding. "This amendment is the slow-motion starvation of education that would lead to its eventual privatization," he said. Iowa Representative Craig Johnson, Republican Independent, though, said he was comfortable with the funding level and the AEA changes, especially given the teacher and paraprofessional pay raises. The sun's going to come up tomorrow, and we'll have $174 million total in increased education funding, when you take it all together, he said. And I have a niece who benefited from AEAs. If you like your AEA, you can keep your AEA. But the emotion that's been caught up in this, I understand. When pressed by Democrats in debate, House Majority Leader Matt Winchell, Republican Missouri Valley, said he did not know if Senate Republicans would support the new package, but that they should. Senate Republican Majority Leader Jack Woodiver, Republican Grimes, acknowledged the House bill in a statement, but made no indication of support. Our third and final front page piece, Forum highlights local strides to boost immigrant resources. Leaders of a local effort to enhance resources for immigrant communities reported strides in several projects at a biannual forum Thursday. Members of the Better Together Committee, founded by Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, said efforts are progressing to address key obstacles that immigrants face locally, such as obtaining and retaining jobs, medical translation, employment for international students, and navigating the healthcare system. The Better Together Committee consists of about 60 stakeholders who work on projects to increase resources and opportunities for area immigrants. Thursday's forum featured updates from the committee and insights from Dubuque Community Schools staff on challenges student immigrants face. By not trying to ignore immigrant populations or not trying to push them away, but by creating a welcoming space, we are allowing families and individuals within our community to thrive like we want everyone to be able to, said Alex Baum, the foundation's director of advocacy, data, and learning. After identifying challenges local employers face in hiring and retaining staff who are immigrants, a subcommittee is looking into making cultural competency and language resources accessible for employers, holding an employer summit, and building stronger connections between community members and employers, Baum said. He also noted the possibility of consultants working with employers on how they can increase their cultural competency and make their workplaces accessible to immigrants. That's what we really identified as a big challenge in this, is this lack of cultural and linguistic knowledge that really needs to be developed so that no matter who you are in Dubuque, you are able to thrive in Dubuque, he said. Baum also noted that while Dubuque has several colleges, the community continues to fall short in hiring international students when they graduate. To help keep that talent within the community, a subcommittee is connecting with law firms to fully understand the visa system and is part of a national cohort of organizations working to keep international students within communities after graduation. Most of our cohort partners are huge cities with large firms and businesses there. But we believe that a city Dubuque size can also punch above our weight and really turn this into a regional strength as opposed to a weakness, he said. Baum also touched on the lack of certified medical translators in the area and the lack of navigators, culturally competent individuals, who can help immigrants sift through the healthcare, judicial, and other systems. Baum said a subcommittee has identified a potential online Spanish training course as part of a goal to get 40 community members certified as medical translators, 20 in Spanish and 20 in Marshallese. He said members also are working with organizations in Arkansas to get people certified in Marshallese. These efforts can be costly, however, so the committee is also seeking funding. We currently have 5 different grant applications that are out, Baum said. We're hoping that will push us forward, but there might be additional resources that we look for in the future. The forum also featured 2 Dubuque Community Schools English language learner teachers who highlighted how the number of ELL students has increased over time and the work they do to support them. Cassie McDonald, an ELL teacher who is on the district's secondary educational support team, said teachers work closely with students to provide individualized education, but students still face challenges adjusting to a new cultural and language while taking coursework. The academic demands are very great for all students, and it's extremely challenging for newcomer multilingual learners, she said. Megan Ruiz, executive director of Presentation Lantern Center in Dubuque, is a member of several of the subcommittees. She said in an interview that the forum highlighted both successes and continued challenges in the area. I'm so grateful we live in a community like Dubuque where we're not perfect, but we all collectively care so much and we all try so hard to do well by people and do our best to serve them in the most caring, effective way that we can, she said. Now we'll turn to Our View, the quick takes presented by the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board, and it is their opinions that we are reading. And today we have 3 smiley faces again. Our first one, Upper Mississippi Refuge has been protecting Driftless Region for a century. Happy 100th birthday to the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife and Fish Refuge and its century of conservation efforts. It was in 1924 that Congress passed the Upper Mississippi River Wildlife and Fish Refuge Act which authorized the acquisition of land for a refuge between Rock Island, Illinois, and Wabasha, Minnesota. A century later, the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife and Fish Refuge stretches 261 river miles and covers 240,000 square miles of Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. The refuge hosts more than 3.7 million annual visitors for hunting, fishing, wildlife observation, and other recreation. More than 300 types of birds migrate through the refuge, from pelicans and tundra swans to piping plovers and bobolinks, and about 50% of the world's canvasback ducks. It provides habitat for 51 mammal species, 42 types of freshwater mussels, and more than 100 species of fish. If you've taken in the view of bald eagles around locks and dams, such as in Dubuque and Bellevue, Iowa, when the river is frozen during the winter and the only open water to be found is near the dams, you've got the refuge to thank. In 1972, there was only 1 bald eagle nest in the refuge. Today, there are 350 to 400 nests each year. Over the years, the refuge has worked hard to combat challenges such as drought, flooding, and erosion, as well as invasive species like zebra mussels, silver carp, and burr cucumber. A toast to the refuge and its care and conservation of one of the region's most precious resources. Our second smiley face. It's always great to see federal money flowing into the tri-state area to support worthy programs. Such was the case last week, with multiple local projects slated to receive funding with the passage of the Federal Appropriations Bill. The package includes more than $6.5 million in funding for various projects and initiatives across the tri-state area. Among the local organizations receiving funding is Four Mounds Foundation, which received $1 million for its Housing Education and Rehabilitation Training, HEART, Building, Dubuque program in which youth participants can earn a high school diploma while gaining construction experience restoring homes in Dubuque. The nonprofit began offering adult programming in 2019 and has served more than 100 adults since that time, including 60 in 2023. Additionally, Lancaster, Wisconsin received $1.125 million in federal money for a renovation project at its fire station, designed to make the station compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act, along with a new roof and mechanical and HVAC system upgrades. From another federal pocket came a $2 million grant for the City of Dubuque and East Central Intergovernmental Association to support a future phase of the city's smart traffic routing with efficient and effective traffic signals, or STREETS, project, which seeks to develop a smart traffic management system for the city. Here's to federal partners helping local communities make positive changes. And our final smiley face? A facility resulting from the aid of a 2022 federal grant that opened in Platteville, Wisconsin this week will provide a much-needed home to some of Southwest Wisconsin's most vulnerable women. Family advocates this month began their move to a new 14,000-square-foot building at 305 East Side Road in Platteville. The organization serves victims of domestic and sexual violence in Grant, Lafayette, and Iowa counties. The new 10-bedroom building will replace the nonprofit's former shelter, which had 7 bedrooms and less than 4,000 square feet of space. Family advocates broke ground on the new building last May. The $3.6 million project was funded in large part by a $3.5 million federal grant awarded to the City of Platteville in 2022. This new facility should help address the great need in this area for the domestic violence shelter, which has had to turn hundreds of people away in past years. Congrats to Family Advocates staff on their new healing home. And we have one letter to the editor. Choose next president wisely. Barbara Rank, Hidden Oaks Court, Dubuque. The parties have their nominees. Now the choice is ours. For the never Bidens and never Trumpers, the choice has already been made. Everyone else has 7 months to weigh their options before Election Day. Those who believe that government is the problem may want to consider the alternative. Giving your voice to someone who doesn't respect the role of government or the rule of law puts a lot of faith in the independent choices that president will make. Maybe those choices will align with your wishes. Maybe they won't. Those who think that our democratic republic has served us well for over 200 years will choose a leader who is willing to work within the boundaries of our Constitution, amendments, Bill of Rights, legislative, judicial, and executive branches. Our system works slowly and methodically, but so far has been able to adjust to address problems as they arise and has met the challenges. Our government is the envy of the world. Choose your representatives and leaders carefully. Our system relies on informed voters, never more urgently than in these rapidly changing times. Educate yourself and check your sources. Our system of government gives us the choice. We must take it seriously. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, and I am reading from the Friday, March 22nd edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Nancy L. Moore, Maquoketa, Nancy L. Moore, a cherished wife, mother, grandmother, sister, and friend, left this world to join the angels on March 19th at the age of 68 in Dubuque. Born on June 26, 1955 in Maquoketa, Nancy was the daughter of Donald and Thelma Kuntz Davis. Her vibrant spirit and warm heart touched the lives of all who knew her. Nancy's journey began in Maquoketa, where she attended local schools and graduated from Maquoketa High School in 1973. It was in this familiar setting that she met and married her lifelong sweetheart, David T. Moore Sr., on February 10, 1973. Their union was blessed with love, partnership, and the joy of raising three wonderful children together. Throughout her life, Nancy balanced her roles as a devoted wife and mother with a professional career that included various positions before she retired from a fulfilling tenure in the sales department at KMAQ radio station in Maquoketa. Alongside her husband, she also co-owned and operated a beloved karaoke business, bringing music and laughter to many. Her commitment to her community shone brightly through her involvement with Faith Community Church in Maquoketa. Nancy's faith was an essential part of her life, guiding her actions and inspiring those around her. Nancy also had a passion for arts and crafts, traveling and cruising around in their convertible. Yet above all, Nancy's heart belonged to her family. She was the proud matriarch of a legacy that included many. A celebration of her life will be held at 11:30 a.m. Monday, March 25th at Faith Community Church in Maquoketa. Visitation will be held prior to the funeral from 10 to 11:15 a.m. at the church. A private burial will be at the Rose Hill Cemetery, Toronto, Iowa. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, a Nancy Lee Moore Memorial Fund has been established. Online condolences may be left at www.carsonandsons.com. Joyce M. Ponto. Joyce Marie Ponto, 72, of Asbury, passed away Tuesday, March 19th at Mercy One Hospital. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory is entrusted with arrangements. Joyce was born February 5th, 1952, in Dubuque, the daughter of Edmund J. and Marion L. Schumacher Glover. She graduated from Wallert High School and was employed as a personal banker at American Trust and Savings Bank for 29 years, retiring in 2008. After her retirement, Joyce spent several years working at Do-Ride. Joyce married Anthony Tony Ponto on June 3, 1989, in Las Vegas. He preceded her in death on September 14, 2011. She enjoyed reading and spending time with her dogs, Kirsty, Bella, Kiwi, and Lacey, and her special cat, Baby, also known as Lumpy. Joyce had a generous heart, a quick wit, and loved to tell jokes to anyone who would listen. The family would like to thank the emergency room staff at Mercy One Hospital for their compassion and help. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made in Joyce's memory to the Dubuque Regional Humane Society. Rosalie McDermott, Cibula. Rosalie McDermott, 96, of Cibula, died on Tuesday, March 19th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Monday, March 25th, at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Savannah, where services will follow. Burial will take place in St. Peter's Catholic Cemetery in Cibula. Law Jones Funeral Home of Savannah is assisting the family. Christina Simon, Cascade. Christina Simon, 54, of Cascade, died Thursday, March 21st. Arrangements are pending. Rife Funeral Home of Cascade is assisting the family. Joanne Deal, Galena. Joanne Deal, 95, of Galena, died Thursday, March 21st. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. And we have a few new arrivals to bring out. And we begin with those from Tuesday, March 19th. Pedersen Brunton, Evan Pedersen, and Carissa Brunton of Darlington, a boy at Southwest Health Platteville. Wednesday, March 20th, Aragon, Eric and Sherry Lynn Aragon of Dubuque, a girl at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, Dubuque. Schmitz Brenke, Trenton Schmitz and Caitlin Brenke of Epworth, a boy at Finley. Wilson, Jacob and Hillary Wilson of Dubuque, a girl at Finley. Welcome all you little ones. May you be embraced by love through your lives. And now we'll take a look at a little bit of our Dubuque and Tri-State news. Appointed Dubuque County Recorder files for elected office. A longtime county employee has filed to run for elected office. Carol Kennedy of Dubuque recently filed to run for Dubuque County Recorder. As of Thursday, she faced no challengers, although candidates have until the end of the day today to file. Kennedy has worked in the county recorder's office for 33 years, starting as a part-time clerk and working her way up to deputy recorder before her appointment last year to the county recorder spot. The County Board of Supervisors appointed her to the role in February of 2023 after the resignation of former office holder John Murphy, who was re-elected to the recorder position in 2022 but resigned to pursue a different job. At the time of her appointment, Kennedy said she only intended to fill the role until this year's election. Once she settled into her appointed position, however, she said she quickly took a liking to the responsibilities and role of county recorder. "There wasn't really one thing that changed my mind about running," she said. "I've just really loved the job that I've gotten to do this last year and want the chance to keep doing it." The Dubuque County Recorder's Office maintains land, public, and personal property records, including birth, death, and marriage certificates. The office also issues licenses and collects fees in accordance with Iowa code. Kennedy said she believes her 33 years working in the office gives her a breadth of experience that has been and would continue to be beneficial in handling such matters. She added that she already has a sense of familiarity and comfort with office staff that ensures efficient communication. "Experience is crucial in this kind of role," Kennedy said. "Having worked here so long, I feel very comfortable handling all the different pieces of technicalities of Iowa code." Since her appointment, Kennedy has been acting as county recorder while continuing to complete some tasks she did as deputy recorder. Other tasks since have been reassigned to remaining staff members, she said, with minimal impact on the office's operations or efficiency. If elected to a full term, she said, the office likely would carry on in the same manner without the hiring of an additional deputy recorder. Her focus then would be on maintaining the office's operational efficiency, fiscal responsibility, and positive workplace culture. "I try to lead by example and be very direct with my employees," Kennedy said. If elected, that would continue. "I want them to know that I'm always open to helping out and always open to suggestions." And we have a second piece on our Tri-State page. With it comes this large family picture, four smiling people in it, and the caption beneath it reads, "Alicia Meyer, Maddie Meyer, Ella Meyer, and Michael Meyer pose for a family photo." And our article is "Benefit Plan for Brave Little Soul Battling Extremely Rare Form of Cancer." When Maddie Meyer got sick, no one in her family could have known what uncertainty was ahead. At the time of her diagnosis, Maddie of Dubuque was one of only 14 people ever in recorded human history with a rare form of cancer called cutaneous myelocytic tumor with CRTC1 TRIM 11 fusion and prominent epidermal involvement. Wow, that's a mouthful. Michael and Alicia Meyer, Maddie's parents, said their daughter, who was 5 years old at the time, was also the youngest person to ever be diagnosed with the cancer. The cancerous cells were removed in a procedure in 2021, but Maddie, now 7 years old, is battling the same cancer again after it recurred last spring and has since spread to her axillary lymph nodes and both her lungs. To help offset the cost of frequent trips to University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital in Iowa City for treatment, Maddie's family is hosting a benefit to raise funds. Vicki Palm, Michael Meyer's aunt, helped organize the benefit, which will include a live and silent auction, food and drinks, a bake sale, and activities for kids, Palm said. It will be held from noon to 5 p.m. on Saturday, March 23rd at the Dubuque County Fairgrounds 4-H Community Center auction. Auction items include Iowa Hawkeyes football tickets, local restaurant gift cards, a large Coca-Cola cooler, and many other donations from local businesses. I'll bet you, just in my house, I have over 100 baskets from local vendors in the city of Dubuque, Palm said. Maddie currently travels to Iowa City every 2 weeks for treatment. Of the 14 total patients ever diagnosed, Maddie is only the second whose cancer metastasized, according to a report by the Journal of Cutaneous Pathology. Her parents said there was no recorded treatment of the first patient, so Maddie is somewhat of a guinea pig for doctors. There's no stages, and they don't know how to treat it, Alicia Meyer said. She's a brave little soul. Maddie's journey began in June 2021 when Alicia said she noticed a raised red bump on Maddie's arm. A biopsy and subsequent test said the bump was benign and a doctor said it would go away on its own. However, it only grew in size over the next few months. Maddie was released to the university, or rather was referred to the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital, where the bump was removed and tests confirmed that it was a rare cancer, Alicia said. Maddie was good for a while, her dad said, but last year he and Alicia found a sign that their daughter might not be out of the woods. In April 2023, they felt a bump behind her scar. Maddie was taken into surgery to remove the cancer again, but an ultrasound and CT scan showed the cancer had spread to her axillary lymph nodes and both her lungs. Maddie began immunotherapy treatments that stopped the cancer from spreading and, more recently, have started shrinking it. For Alicia and Michael, it is still hard to wrap their minds around Maddie's illness. It's a lot to take in, especially since there's no guidelines as to how to treat it, and we're kind of in the unknown, Alicia said. While facing the uncertainty of her situation, Maddie's parents said the young girl takes it all in stride the best that she can. She's been so strong through all of this, Alicia said. Now we'll begin taking a look at some of our area news in brief. Dubuque County Right to Life Dinner set for April 4th. The founder of a men's outreach organization will deliver the address at an annual event in Dubuque. Mark Hoke will speak at Dubuque County Right to Life's 30th annual Life Dinner, set to take place from 5 to 10 p.m. on April 4th at Grand River Center, 500 Bell Street, according to an online announcement. Hoke is an author, lecturer on chastity, radio host, activist, and founder of The King's Men, a nonprofit men's outreach organization. The dinner is free. A free will offer is accepted. Call the organization at 563-556-5960 or email reception@dcrtl.org to reserve a place at the dinner. Cover Crop Field Day set for April 5th in Joe Davies County. From Stockton, Joe Davies County Farm Bureau will hold a cover crop field day next month. The event will be held at 1 p.m. April 5th at the Greg Thorin Farm, 4629 Illinois 78 in rural Stockton. Speakers will include Thorin, John Musser of Stevenson Services Company, Art Sheely of AgdeTech, and Dennis Bush of University of Wisconsin, Platteville. Police, one hurt in two-vehicle crash in Dubuque. Police said one person was injured in a two-vehicle crash this week in Dubuque. Kenneth R. Cunningham, 61, of East Dubuque, Illinois, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for treatment of his injuries, according to Dubuque Police. Police reported that a vehicle driven by Tiplip K. Rakin, 60, of Dubuque, west on West 17th Street at 1248 p.m. on Tuesday, rear-ended Cunningham's vehicle while it was stopped on West 17th at the intersection with West Locust Street. Rakin was cited with failure to maintain control and no insurance. Police. Cassville couple defrauded friends, family out of more than $200,000. A Cassville couple has been arrested after police said the two defrauded their friends and family out of more than $200,000. Janet J. Udelhoven, 75, and Paul A. Udelhoven, 73, both of Cassville, recently were charged in connection with the incident. Janet Udelhoven was charged with 15 counts of theft by false representation, while Paul Udelhoven was charged with 17 counts of theft by false representation. Cassville Police Chief Brent McDonald said the couple borrowed nearly $220,000 from friends, family, and neighbors from 2021 to early 2024. Court documents state that a total of 23 people have been identified who loaned the couple anywhere from $400 to $28,000. Very little of that money was ever returned, documents state. Documents state that Paul and Janet Udelhoven told victims they needed the money for medical bills, taxes, and other necessary expenses. Investigators believe, however, that those excuses were falsified and the funds were used for different means. Janet Udelhoven told police in March and October of 2023 that she and Paul Udelhoven had been sending tens of thousands of dollars to who they believed to be overseas relatives in mounting financial trouble, documents state. Multiple people, including local law enforcement and banking officials, attempted to tell them it was a scam, documents state, but the couple would not listen. Nationally recognized speaker to present Mocktails and Mental Health in Galena. From Galena this comes. An Illinois farmer, mental health counselor, and nationally recognized speaker will discuss work-life balance and stress management at a free event in Joe Davies County. Adrian DeSutter of Galesburg is the founder of Sow Hope, Grow Hope. She will present Mocktails and Mental Health at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, March 27th at Midwest Medical Center, according to an online announcement. The event is sponsored by Joe Davies County Farm Bureau and Midwest Medical Center. Registration is required and can be made by calling 815-858-2235 or visiting tinyurl.com/Mocktail Mental Health. Snow predicted for most of area. An approaching early spring snowstorm has prompted forecasters to issue a weather advisory for most of the tri-state. The advisory covers Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties in Iowa, Joe Davies County in Illinois, and Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin, and is effective from 1 a.m. to 1 p.m. today, according to the National Weather Service. The Weather Service reports that snow showers, were expected to begin overnight and continue into today. Snow accumulations of 3 to 5 inches are possible. The snow could cause slippery road conditions. Active weather is expected to continue early next week, with isolated thunderstorms possible on Monday, March 25th, according to the Weather Service. Platteville Library to close on Sundays. Platteville Public Library will pause its Sunday operations due to low staffing levels, effective immediately. Starting Sunday, March 24th, the library will be closed on Sundays, according to a library-issued news release. The library typically closes on Sundays for most of the summer, but the release states the library's Board of Trustees determined it was necessary to accelerate that schedule due to current staffing levels. The library will reopen for regular Sunday hours on September 8th. Manchester Firemen's Dance Set. This is in Manchester. A weekend event will support Manchester's fire and rescue services. Manchester Fire Department's annual Fireman's Dance will be held from 7 to 11 p.m. on Saturday, March 23rd at the Gathering Place, 1711 North 2nd Street. The event features live music by Full Circle. A $5 donation will be accepted at the door. Proceeds benefit Manchester's fire and rescue services. And we do have one other piece I found from the Tri-States. It's a man faces mother-in-law for open seat. From Hazel Green. This is an election preview from the Southwestern Wisconsin School District Board of Education. George Splinter said he hadn't expected to campaign against his mother-in-law. It kind of happened by accident, he said. Splinter and Sue Bennett are vying for the Area 3 seat on the Southwestern Wisconsin School District Board of Education. Splinter said he discovered his election opponent was his wife's mother when he submitted his filing papers with the district. The secretary said, "You know, you're running against your mother-in-law," Splinter said. "It was awkward for a little while, but Bennett is a great mother-in-law. I have nothing bad to say about her." There are two open seats on the Board of Education for the Hazel Green-based school district, one each in Area 1 and 3. Incumbent Larry Grant is the only declared candidate for the Area 1 seat. The Area 3 incumbent, Story Dressens, decided not to run for re-election. Dressens' neighbors, Bennett and Splinter, both filed for election January 2nd, according to district officials. Bennett filed just ahead of her son-in-law. The Telegraph Herald this week spoke with the candidates about their backgrounds and motivations for running and the uniqueness of campaigning against an in-law. "It's interesting and kind of strange," Bennett said. "We will still get along, though." Sue Bennett, age 78, resides in Hazel Green, husband Marvin, 4 adult children and 12 grandchildren. Her relevant experience, co-founder of Hazel Green Recreation, Inc., served one term on the Hazel Green Village Board, treasurer of the women's group at St. Francis de Sales Church. Bennett and her husband Marvin have lived in Hazel Green for 56 years. Their daughter Jody is married to Splinter, and the two families live next door along Wisconsin 11. And she says, "I've always been interested in the schools. All of my children went there and graduated from there. There's been some good things that have happened since Bennett's children graduated, and some not so good things. They have cutbacks on electives for kids, which is not good. The kids currently in school should have some of the same classes as when my kids went to school there." Bennett said she backed a $3.9 million measure that was not approved in the April 2023 election. That measure would have helped cover standard operation costs for the district. And she supports the operating referendum for the upcoming April 2nd ballot. "We're really struggling with our budget," Bennett said, of the district situation. "We had to do a lot of cuts there, which didn't help." And her son-in-law, George Splinter, age 55, also in Hazel Green Township. He's a journeyman electrician, and he has a family, his wife Jody, and 4 children. His relevant experience: served on the Pastoral Education Committee for St. Joseph Catholic Church, served on Apprenticeship Committee for International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Splinter and his wife, Jody, have a child who is a freshman at Southwestern Wisconsin High School. Splinter said he wants to increase his involvement in school affairs and bring a fresh viewpoint to the board. "I'm no nonsense, and I will ask questions," he said. "My friends don't always share my opinions, but we all still get along." He also supports the operating referendum, or supported or supports rather, the operating referendum and believes voters' rejection of the 2023 measure was due to that referendum following too closely behind the February decision to spend $1.29 million to purchase 92 acres in anticipation of future district growth. Buying the acreage was a golden opportunity, but it was a bad timing for everything, the previous operating referendum particularly, he said. Spencer said he would bring a conservative viewpoint to the board with an aim toward safeguarding the district's financial future. Teachers deserve all the pay they get, he said, but let's see what we can save in other areas. And now we have our weekend buzz, the noteworthy things to do in the tri-states this weekend. Might have some snow out there, but nonetheless, we have the Taming of the Shrew production today and Saturday, Jansen Music Hall, Clark University, 7 p.m. both days. Clark University and Fly By Night Productions will present Shakespeare's comedy as a play within a play with an all-female cast. Easter Bunny Visit, Delhi Public Library. Saturday, 10 a.m. to noon, kids can get into the Easter spirit by meeting the Easter Bunny and receiving goodie bags. It's free. Centennial Storm at Rockdale Historian Event, Saturday, E.B. Lyons. 10:30 a.m. to noon, local historian Kyle Cox presents on a catastrophic 1876 storm and the destruction it left in its wake, including the deadly Rockdale flood. The music of Florence Price and Margaret Bonds, Saturday, Centrally Rooted, 22:30 Central, 2 p.m. Pianist Luke Tyler and vocalist Shelley Cooper invite the community to join them in celebrating the works and careers of prolific musicians and composers Price and Bonds. Steve Morris with the Bowman, Pickney and Evans Band, Saturday, Five Flags, 7:30 p.m. Headlining musical comedian Morris is joined by special guests, the Bowman, Pickney and Evans Band at the historic Five Flags Theater. Mission $19 to $30 plus fees. Elton John and Billy Joel tribute performance, Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar. We have at 8 p.m., two acts in one night. The Elton John tribute, Captain Fantastic, is joined by the Billy Joel tribute, 52nd Street. Must be 21 to be able to attend.